So good morning, Joan, and welcome back again.
Well, today, gosh, looking at the news, I think we need an hour-long show. we have lots of stuff to cover, and sometimes the difficulty of having lots of things is that you're unable, unless you only pick two or three, to actually cover things in depth. But I think it's important for our listeners always to know what the Vatican's up to. I mean, here's what's been done this week, even if every single thing is not done in great detail. What the Pope is doing, what he has written, and what the church is, to get this overall general picture of, the Vatican is not just a big papal mass on a special occasion or a big papal document on another occasion.
But that's what you're so good at, Joan. That's exactly, that is your talent, I think.
hopefully so. Give our people an overview. And we might start actually with a couple of announcements made this week. Mm-hmm. And something the two trips that were kind of alluded to actually in the past, in the first place, because it's really upcoming, the Pope will be going on November 8th. He'll make a pastoral visit to the Italian towns of Brescia and Concesio. And, of course, both of these are associated with Pope Paul VI. And
that's
most
right.
People say he was born in Brescia, but it was actually nearby Concesio.
That's
and the
right.
Pope will visit the house in which he was born. And this is to mark the 31st anniversary, really, of Paul's death, of course, in 1978. And it'll be a day-long trip. There will be a mass in Brescia, in the cathedral there, and kind of a spill out into the Paul VI Square. And in the afternoon, the Pope meets the organizers of the visits. He will go to the house in Concesio where Paul VI was born. And then he goes to the Paul VI Institute, and there's the awarding of the annual prize. Actually, it's not annual. It's every 5 years, the Paul VI. I had thought it was annual. The Paul VI Prize is given out, and it goes this year to a group, a series called Source Chrétienne, Christian Sources, actually. And so
And what
that,
is the motivation for this prize?
And it is given every year to a person or a group that has done a great deal, made a significant contribution to inspire religion, to religiously inspire cultures, mm-hmm. to make cultures focus on religion and on the religious aspect of life. And so that trip is the closest, but then another trip, and we're actually looking at 2010, but still this, time passes so quickly, 2010 is going to be here in about an hour.
Don't say that.
I know, it's kind of scary. But the Pope will travel to northern Italy, to the city of Turin, on May 2nd, 2010, to see the Shroud of Turin, which,
right.
of course, is that linen cloth, I think all of our listeners know that, that bears the image of a crucified man that many millions of Christians have believed for centuries to be the burial cloth of Christ. And it's interesting because I get emails on things like this, and no, the Church has not pronounced itself. We have Benedict going, John Paul went, I've forgotten whether it's once or twice now. I think there was an exposition the year that he was elected, in fact, in 78. But the Church has not pronounced herself on this. However, she also does not discourage people making pilgrimages to venerate a cloth that could very well be Christ, the one that wrapped the body of Christ. And the interesting thing is, this is probably the most studied relic, mm-hmm. Artifact, if you will.
It's pretty amazing.
In the history of mankind, yes, it's, exactly. Since it was discovered, since technology came about to be able to do carbon dating, so forth and so on, and a lot of the scholars studying this are people who are not religiously inclined, mm-hmm. either. Some are outright atheists. I mean, they admit that. And so they're not looking mm-hmm. at this with the eyes of faith. They're looking at it with the eyes of science. Mm-hmm. And so much science points to 2,000 years ago. It's just, someday I'd love to do a whole show on that, simply because I did 6 months of research and interviews and reading on this years ago. And
I was going to ask you if you'd ever seen it.
That's the amazing thing. I've always had something come up. Years and years ago, 78, when it was... when it came out, when I had just moved to Italy and I had done this piece and was doing this piece. And I was actually called, at that time I was freelancing, but I was called to work in Cairo in the office of the New York Times, where a very good friend of mine was bureau chief. So it just things like that have come up. So I'm very excited about the trip myself.
I don't think it's always on show either.
It isn't.
It's kept in the cathedral, but only in certain periods can the public
Is it taken out of its
right.
Protective containers. So, and anybody listening who wants to learn about this, by the way, and reserve online for the period of, I think it's April 10th to May 23rd, that the Shroud will be on exposition. And the site is Sindone, S-I-N-D-O-N-E, Italian for Shroud, sindone.org. So when you go to that, they have English and Italian.
And the Pope will be going, we were saying, in June, right?
No, he goes May 2nd.
Oh, he goes May 2nd.
He goes May 2nd. So it's right in between, midway between those, that 6 or 7 week period. So that's kind of something we can look forward to. And then looking back, we have big events too, because obviously the Synod for Africa after 3 weeks concluded on Sunday with the final Mass presided over by the Pope, concelebrated by the African bishops and cardinals. And by the way, they wore Saturday, they had lunch with the Pope. That was in the atrium of the Paul VI Hall. And they were given chasubles, which are green chasubles, which they can wear, obviously, most of the year in ordinary time. Green chasubles with the Pope's coat of arms on the front. And the Pope wore gold vestments. It was a very wonderful celebration. Cardinal Turkson was telling me how very much he enjoyed the harmony between the African culture, the African music that they brought into it, and then, of course, the music of the beautiful choir of St. Peter's. So that was Sunday. But then you had Friday and Saturday wrapping up the Synod with Friday, the final message. Right. I put that on my website, on my blog.
It was so comprehensive. It touched on every single thing.
Every single speech that had been given for 3 weeks, any suggestion thrown out, any topic was in that. It was beautifully written.
It was beautifully written, yes.
And it was in 4 languages, folks, so you can't say, I don't think you can say you can't read it. I don't think it was in Swahili, but in any event, it was in 4 of the principal languages of Africa. So very much worth reading if you go to the website, if you want to learn about Africa, its problems, its joys, its challenges. And the propositions then that came out a day later at a press conference in the Vatican pretty much mirrored what was in the message. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The 57 propositions that the bishops put together. Now, what happens with these is they give them to the Holy Father, who then uses them in consideration when he is writing his post-synodal document. And of course, we had a little bit of an announcement made Saturday at the press conference. It had been rumored, and I had put it on my blog, it had been rumored for quite some time that Cardinal Turkson was going to be called to Rome to head the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. And in fact, that announcement was made. And
Cardinal Turkson of Ghana.
Yes, he was brought to Rome. Cardinal Renato Martino has retired. I believe he's 77 or about to be. And so the cardinal from Ghana will be called to Rome. He's a very amiable man. He's a biblical scholar. He's multilingual. And I have to tell you, just from one little personal experience interviewing him, I could see that he was a very, very humble man.
Would you like to tell our listeners about your experience? I think
it was wonderful.
Very significant.
You're right. We met in the Casa Santa Marta in the Vatican where the Synod Fathers were staying. And as we were on our way to one of the small reception rooms to be able to talk and have the interview, as we turned a corner, one of the housekeepers was coming in from a courtyard with one of the great big carts that a housekeeper will have.
With all her detergents
detergents and brooms and things like that. And the cardinal, here he is, dressed in all of his red finery and the red zucchetta, the whole thing. And the cardinal, we turn the corner, he goes right over to her and asks if he can help, puts his hand on the cart and asks if, he can help. And I mean, I have to say, for me, that was a defining moment for this. That defined the man for me. This, he didn't pay any attention to who he was. He was just a human being wanting to help another human being. And I was very moved and touched by that. And you know what? That same quality came out actually during our conversation and in the interview. So anyway, big week, the ending
of the... So good luck to Cardinal Turkson and his new...
Good luck to him. Well, we'll see him
position.
In Rome. We
yes,
will probably right. both be talking to him on the radio. And but I have to say, with all the good news this week, there are so many things we haven't touched on, but there a person who was an institution, really, in the Vatican died Sunday, and that's Camillo Chabin, who headed security for decades and decades in the Vatican. He was 83. He had 58 years of service in the Vatican. I mean, that is so phenomenal. And I was trying to think, who else has that? And the only other person I can think of is Saverio Petrillo, who's the director of the Pontifical Villas out in Casa Gandolfo. He came, he's in his 60s, and I know he came when he was like 18 years old.
Is he still in service?
Yes, he is. He came when he was 18 years old, and he's a lovely, lovely man. So one other thing, there were other things in the Vatican. The Pontifical Biblical Institute celebrated 100 years. The Pope did meet people from that for a congratulatory speech. There was the papal message to the Armenian Catholicos on his 10 years of service.
That was on Tuesday, I think, right?
That was on Tuesday. But I think one other thing we absolutely cannot slide over was Monday's meeting between the Vatican and the SSPX. That's that traditionalist Society of St. Pius X. There's many, many things. These are the ones that broke away from the church in 1988. Mm-hmm. We had four bishops whose excommunication was lifted, but now to bring them back into the fold is a huge long street. Our listeners have to understand that because a lot of the press has given the impression that, oh, wow, they're back in the bosom of the church. They're functioning prelates as priests, and they aren't.
They're not.
They are not at all. So there was a meeting to look at the doctrinal differences, and my word, if you look at what they had to discuss, the questions that they the things then which both sides seem to differ are the concept of tradition, the missal of Paul VI, the interpretation of Vatican Council II in continuity with Catholic doctrinal tradition, themes of unity of the Church, Catholic principles of ecumenism, the relationship between Christianity and non-Christian religions, and religious freedom. So that is no small agenda. And it's important to note this.
So it's an ongoing process.
It's ongoing, exactly. This is not a one-time, it couldn't possibly be a one-time thing unless it was, you know, nonstop for night and day for months. Many issues, tough issues, big challenges. I think there's a sense of, you know, both sides are the immovable from their principles and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see, and all of this in the wake of the church opening up to the Anglicans. We know that news from last week. So it'll be very interesting to see where they go with the Society of St. Pius X. And that will be news in coming weeks, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, Jo.
God bless.
Thanks there to Joan Lewis for that Vatican update.